Okay.
So, call the meeting to order, and we'll start. Thought today is to deal with the talk about the problem of capital renovation and asset preservation. And since we have so many new committee members, we really thought we needed to redo the tour that we did last year of the to look in depth at what the problems with the are going on with the capital. So, Commissioner Badger, thank you.
Madam Chair and members, we're really pleased this afternoon to bring the committee up to date on the state of your wonderful Minnesota State Capitol, which is 105 years old. We celebrated its centennial just a few years ago, and it is, as you look at it, a beautiful building, and it looks to be in fine shape. The marble is gleaming, and the halls are beautiful, the chambers are actually well decorated, but in fact, the Capitol is in deplorable condition, and we want to go into that here a bit this afternoon to give you just some of the detail about what really is in need of dramatic restoration in the Minnesota State Capitol, our iconic building for the state. And I'm just going to very quickly go through 105 years of history, which is to say that when the building was completed in 1905, it housed all of state government, but they had intended for it to actually have some expansion space, but ironically, it was at the time completely full. And so, over time, more space was needed, and finally, by 1936, they excavated the basement. And so a lot of the little rabbit warrens and offices that you now find in the basement are the product of that 1936 renovation. But basically, until 1984, really nothing substantial was done to modify or update or upgrade the state capitol. At that time, the state hired Miller Dunwoody as the architectural firm as the state's sort of master contract capital planners, and they developed in 1988 the first really comprehensive plan for the maintenance and preservation of the Minnesota State Capitol. That's sometimes called the master plan. You may have heard it referred to as that. But then from 1988 until actually the current time, a number of piecemeal renovations occurred, but nothing comprehensive, and you'll see them on this chart. The Senate chambers in their current form were actually renovated or restored in 1987 at a cost of $4.8 million. The House chambers were renovated 2 years later at a cost of $2.2 million. And then there was a large structural stabilization and accessibility upgrade of $8.1 million, some structural repairs and so forth in 1998. The final really sort of restoration of any space in the Capitol occurred in 1999 when the Rathskeller in its current form was created and renovated and updated. Since then, there have been some kind of invisible renovations. There were two electrical vaults that were created to the north of the Capitol, excavated underground from those parking spaces that you see today, and some electricals were moved out to those vaults. And then we come to the year 2000, when sort of, I would say, the modern era of planning for the Minnesota State Capitol began. And we've been about this planning effort now, incredibly, for 9 years. And this sort of list of activities shows what happened. We commissioned, we had $300,000 to create a pre-design in 2000. That pre-design was issued in 2001, and it had a number of findings. Findings of which were that there was simply insufficient space in the Capitol to house the functions that would ordinarily be housed there. And indeed, there were need for greater public hearing rooms, expansion space, and of course, the findings of the mechanicals were at that point nearing the end of their useful life. In 2005, there was $1.17 million appropriated for the third floor restoration, and I think you've probably seen pictures of that. The elaborate work that's been done to restore the plaster and the paintings that had been damaged by water. There was $1.2 million then appropriated as a result of the pre-design in 2005 to update that pre-design and to really move forward with a more comprehensive plan for renovation. A contract was awarded to an architectural firm, local and affiliated with a nationally known firm, that works in capital restoration after a very intense competition. We had 10 or 11 firms that vied for that contract. We awarded that contract in 2005, and they went about then looking at updating that pre-design 2005 standards. You'll know, of course, that September 11th, 2001 had occurred since then, and so there was a heightened sense of security need and issues. A comprehensive review was done of the mechanicals. Energy costs were increasing, and so energy efficiency was a major finding of that study. Technology had advanced, and we needed badly to keep pace and catch up with that. There was, in fact, a legislative restriction in one of the earlier bills that said none of the money on pre-design could be used to design a new building. So that restriction necessarily required that work to look at the current footprint of the Capitol to meet all of its needs. And it asked that we increase public participation in government. In other words, to provide better visitor accommodations, better dining facilities for our visitors, and so forth. So at that point, that sort of was the end of that effort, except to say that there was an additional appropriation for $1.4 million to examine what was going on in the dome, because this dome is unique. There's only one other like it in the world, I believe, which is the Vatican. And it is one of the unique architecturally, and the dome is in really bad shape. Now, we know that from its leaks, but you're going to see some pictures of what really is now going on in that dome. We continued the schematic design, and we presented a plan for renovation of the state capitol, a comprehensive plan, which, quite frankly, was not did not get consensus. There was, I believe, agreement in the Senate that the plan was worth going forward on, but there was considerable disagreement in the House. And that resulted then in the formation of a Capitol Restoration Working Group. And so in the legislative, in legislature of 2007, $250,000 was actually appropriated for the creation and the workings of this legislative joint working group consisting of House and Senate members, as well as Supreme Court, public members, members of the disability community, and so forth. That committee met four times. Its last meeting was in November of 2007. We've not met for some time, and I believe the remaining funds were unallotted as part of this most recent unallotment activity. So basically, I believe we learned at the Capital Investment Committee just a week or so ago from Chair Hausman that she considers, and she was one of the co-chairs of that committee, that that committee is no longer in effect and working. So we don't have a current way in which we can advance the cause of this Minnesota State Capitol.
If I can ask you, Jeff, how was that coordinating commission formed? Was that formed through the LCC or something?
Okay, that's correct.
It was necessary to do this, the LCC would be the place to go to ask to have that done again.
Madam Chair, that's correct, and they received the appropriation.
Okay.
So that kind of brings us up to date, and this is really in the way of a kind of a informational hearing, and also to sort of just keep in the forefront this, I think, pressing need of what I think is our state's most important building from many respects. And so I'm going to turn it over to Dave Fielding, who is our Director of Plant Management, and he's going to take you through some pictures of some of these areas.
Okay. Right now, we do have a quorum now, so Representative Cash moves the adoption of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Okay. Mr. Fielding.
Madam Chair, my name is Dave Fielding. I'm the Director of Plant Management in the Department of Administration, and what I want to do here for the next few minutes is take you through a series of photos and slides that you have in your package to not only give you an indication of the current state of affairs in the Capitol building, but also to give you alert you to certain things so that when we do the tour later that perhaps some of these areas will become a little more familiar to you. We, plant management, day in, day out, 24/7, is responsible for the maintenance and operation of capital and capital facilities, and our folks take a great deal of pride in being able to do that. But with the passage of time, there have been deficiencies created in the capital buildings that render preventative maintenance alone insufficient. And as you'll see during the tour today, the age of major systems is considerable and getting older. You'll also see that equipment has been added incrementally over the years, and that as a result, our building has quite literally one of everything. I wish I could tell you that simply replacing the head-end equipment in the building would address the many deficiencies, but I cannot. because our ability to manage these systems and to ensure both interior comfort, energy efficiency, safety, code compliance, accessibility, and operating efficiencies requires us to address the entire system, from the head-end equipment out to the vast array of distribution networks throughout the building, and ultimately to the endpoints of service delivery. And to address that scale of work will require major disruptions to the building. Spaces will need to be vacated, walls, ceilings, and floors will need to be removed, old systems will need to be taken out, and new, more efficient systems will need to be installed. And until we have a plan that provides us with the ability to undertake work of that scale, we'll be limited to the work that seeks to maintain and repair rather than work that restores, upgrades, and improves. Probably one of the easiest ways for me to describe the difficulty that we face in delivering the needs of our customers day in and day out in the building is on this slide. There are 28 air handling units in the Capitol building, and each air handling unit serves a certain set of what we call zones. If you look to the left side of that slide, you'll see three floor plans, all with a dark brown shading. Those represent one zone, and they occur across three different floors, the basement, the ground floor, and the first floor. So if you can imagine that if we get a phone call from a occupant of the basement area saying that it's too warm, the only way that we can address that is to adjust the temperature on the one air handling unit that supports those three zones. And therefore, by reducing the temperature in the basement, we naturally affect the temperature in the ground and ultimately first floor. First floor spaces have windows, solar gain, solar loss. And as a result, it's a constant juggling of temperature settings to try to do the best that we can to address the problem. These conditions exist throughout the building. This is just one representative zone. If you look to the three floor plans to the right, this is simply a way of describing that when we can get into the building and change the air handling systems and the duct work and provide variable air volume boxes and thermostatic controls, that we can set up individual controls for both heat and air conditioning in all of these spaces, as represented by the various colors. Until we can do that, the best that we'll be able to accomplish is what you see on the left. In addition to the aging systems, we have a physical deterioration of the building both inside and outside. We brought with us today a prop which we found last year about this time because we had a leak in the lower level of the Capitol building in the judge's dining room, which you'll see in the tour today. And when we broke through the soffit to find the source of the leak, we found what you see before you. This is the actual condition of a cast iron rain leader that was removed from that area. We have 22 rain leader stacks in the building, verticals and all the horizontal runs, of which this was one of the horizontal sections, all original. And only time will tell, as part of the investigation, which Wayne will describe to you a little later, just how bad the condition is throughout the building. If we find this in one case, the odds are very good that we're going to find it in others. In addition, we have a serious condition, and it's an aging condition, on the exterior of the building. You can see in that photo on the lower left, that's a picture of one of the upper carvings on the dome, and I know it's a little difficult to see in the photograph, but that marble now has deteriorated to the point of not only losing the stone itself, but losing the detail and the carving associated with that stone. And so you can't see it necessarily day in and day out as you walk outside the Capitol building, but the next time you get a chance to look up and study the detail on carvings and other details in this building, recognize that this is a condition which is now reaching the point where I think we have to seriously document what's out there so that at some future point in time, when we do have the funding, we can restore these points back to their original design. We'll take you through a little more detail on the dome itself, but I think you've seen as you walk through the ground that we have plaza areas and steps.
Yes, we have questions.
I'm sorry.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Fielding. Cataloging, one of my least favorite things about these mic setups. The cataloging, I'm wondering if you have engaged the College of Design or the architecture school at the U or others in the community for student-led projects, where I think there's a real great opportunity here to, I don't know if you know, Mr. Fielding, my training's in architecture. An architecture school dropout, but this is a very kind of project that I know is a great value and use to architecture students, undergrads and graduate students.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Wayne Laflossi. I'm the director for real estate and construction services, and I can speak directly to that issue. We have in the past done that very thing on a number of projects, reached out to the University of Minnesota and in particular to their engineering school, where we've had some challenges related to our lab facility, and that's a great suggestion, and then we can look at doing that again in this case. We haven't yet scoped on how we would do that documentation. I'll go into a little bit on the priorities we have for the current funding, and the documentation piece is on the list, but it's not at the top of the list, so and we'll talk about that further in a little bit.
Okay, I'll hold off on specifics when we get to that list, but just offer to Mr. Wesolowski, worked with before and appreciate working with him, Mr. Fielding. I have great relationships over at the architecture school and the college, and I think it may be the kind of thing where we could go a little bit deeper on the priority list at very little cost or even no cost on our budget.
Wonderful, thank you.
Since there are new members of the committee, I will tell a story that I've told in the past, which can be explained if you look at the picture on the front of the Capitol. This is one of the times when I was on the old State Department division, and we were looking at, I don't see the number that ended up resulting in here, but we were looking at the problems of the Capitol and restoration of the Capitol, and certain members, I don't remember the person who features in the incident is Representative Henry Taylor. I don't remember if he was the one who was saying negative things about why we had to do this, and wasn't it just to make the Capitol look prettier. But anyway, the day after, Representative Taylor was standing with a bunch of his constituents right on the steps in front of the Capitol. And if you look at those figures under the horses, the arm from one of them fell down and smashed right next to them. Our committee did that reconstruction funding so fast. So be careful if you're going to vote badly on this stuff. Be careful of where you walk around the Capitol.
And Madam Chair, were you acquitted of all charges related to that incident?
I'm afraid of heights, so I would never go up there by myself. I'm perfectly safe. So, okay.
I'd like to take you, if I may, to this rather detailed, I think, the graphic slide, which shows the current conditions of the dome. One thing that you may not be aware of is that there are actually three dome sections. You see, when you stand in the rotunda and look up, you see the inner dome. But above that is the middle dome, which is really the structural element which holds the lantern and the rest of that dome in place. And then you have the outer dome, which is the marble. It's very difficult to see, I know, on the slide, but down to the lower left is a cross-section of the detail of how those middle dome structural members tie to a tension ring which surrounds the dome and through which everything else is supported. At the juncture of that structural steel with that tension ring, you see a triangular area. And that was designed as a drain. As we've learned from the studying of the documentation on the building, they expected the dome's outer sections to leak. In other words, water was going to get in. They could not, with the expansion and contraction of marble, they knew there was going to be water coming in. So they built that gutter, if you will, in that section as a way of getting the water out. The problem is that has over time been corrupted with construction debris. We're not entirely sure how well it worked from day one to begin with. But the bottom line is that there is moisture that is trapped up in there. There is no ventilation in that area. And so once in, it has a very difficult time getting out. If you look at the picture directly above that cross section, you'll see what it looks like if you were standing really on top of that inner dome looking to the outside wall, and you see a lot of efflorescence, the white picturing on the brick, and you see the steel members. That dark area along with the white there represents moisture, and that's all along that ring on the outside of the dome. Now, as a result, we've had a study done this year. The report has come back. They did expose several of those structural members and found varying degrees of deterioration. The project, which Mr. Wachlowski will cover in more detail, will be to expose all of those steel members to determine what repair work is required. You look up to the right, top right there, you see that is the top ring of the lantern. That's standing water. There was a project done back in the 80s, we understand, which resulted in the abandonment of a drain that used to direct the water out of that area. So we have various sources in this dome, some of it Mother Nature, some of it by design, which caused the water to be able to come into the space. It has nowhere to go. The ultimate effect on the interior of the building is what you see there in the middle, that picture which shows the degree to which plaster and moisture has crept down into the plaster up in the dome, the barrel window area. And so there's a substantial amount of repair work that has to be done up there, but can only be done once we've taken care of the water problem and the structural problem. Security and accessibility, a lot of this has to do with just the changing in operational requirements. You're probably aware with the National Guard vulnerability assessment reports that have been issued over the last couple of years. We have a wide range of issues associated with this building that have to be addressed if we're going to be in compliance with their recommendations. Parking, the proximity of parking, the lack of adequate standoff, the accessibility of the outside air intake, the fact that we have delivery vehicles that can pull right up to that dock on the east side unattended. ADA accessibility obviously is a problem throughout the building, and our tunnel system where we have open access for anyone coming into the building to be able to go then down into other buildings. Space use and insufficient space. I don't need to tell you that hearing room space is difficult. This is actually one of our best rooms for making these kinds of presentations. But there's a tremendous need, both for the work that you do, for the ability of visitors and public to come and attend, and also in terms of how they're received when they come to the building, as represented by that reception desk. We have a wide range of code compliance and life safety issues. I won't go through these for you, but suffice to say that when we undertake a major rework of this building, we will have this list, and probably a larger list by that time, of things that have to be attended to.
Madam Chair, I meant in my list of history or historical events, I did not mention two appropriations that we want to talk about now. The first was $1.4 million appropriated in 2006 for the dome, and then an additional $13.4 million that was appropriated in the last bonding bill in 2008. We'd like to talk to you now about those monies, how they're being used, and how we plan to use them. I'll turn that over to Wayne Wozlowski.
And Chair members, just real quickly, as Commissioner Badgeau mentioned, we have two appropriations that we're working with, and Mr. Fielding has, I think, outlined very well the priorities that we have. Obviously, we're focused on the greatest vulnerabilities that we see for the building today with the limited dollars that we do have. The top priority is clearly the Capitol Dome, and in finishing that investigation on the structural middle column, and completing any repair work that's necessary. Obviously, because we're still doing, we still need to do the investigation piece, we don't know exactly how much repair work is needed, and therefore we don't know exactly how much that's going to cost us, but that'll be one of the first projects that we work on. We'll also at the same time be working on ventilation for the inner and middle dome. Obviously, the design intent was for more moisture to get in from the outer dome. Now we need a way to treat that air so that as we have fluctuations between inside air temperature and the outside, we can do a better job of ventilating that and controlling some of the damage that's occurring. We're also looking at reworking the internal gutter system, as the investor's building suggested, and a big project will be repointing the exterior joints on the dome itself. The other aspect is related to our crop that we have. We're going to do a comprehensive mapping of the internal rain meter system and plumbing stacks associated with the building. Right now, we don't have, there wasn't a complete set of drawings that were prepared to show us where everything runs today. So we need to do, we're going to do a fiber optic scoping of the existing system. We'll do that by going through the roof, so we'll wait till the temperature gets a little warmer to do that. But we'll map that system and figure out what the condition is of the piping. And we're certainly anticipating that we're going to see some considerable deterioration along the way. We are looking at what's our option to minimize the amount of openings and walls that we would have to do to complete repairs. So we're exploring some different options that are in the market for doing that. That internal rain leader study in plumbing stack, we'll have a final report on that in November of 2009, and we'd expect that then we would move into whatever construction work would need to be done. We also, as some of you may recall, if you've heard this presentation in the past, we have air handling units that are at the end or nearing the end of their useful life. We're watching them, and as needed, we will use this funding to replace air handling units. And as Mr. Fielding had alluded to, that is only going to replace the existing condition. That doesn't help better control the environment in the building. So that's obviously something that needs to be taken care of in a more comprehensive way as part of restoration. The other issue that we're going to use this funding as needed to deal with the stabilization of the exterior plaza and staff. Periodically, we get cracking, we get heaving, and right now we're not looking at doing any comprehensive work on that, but as obviously that's a tripping issue and a safety issue, and we'll deal with that as we need to with the funding.
Madam Chair?
Yes, thank you.
Quick question. Mr. Wesloski or Mr. Fielding or Commissioner Badger, I don't know. Telling Representative Bigham I could geek out on this stuff for hours, but I think to the point of our committee, you referenced on the mapping plan, was it custom at the turn of the last century to not include a plumbing schedule in construction documents, or have we lost those documents?
Madam Chair, members, it's a fascinating thing. You might sometimes want to look at those drawings. They were not anywhere close to as detailed of drawings as we would, and that is industry standard today. They figured out a lot of things during construction, including how to build the dome. There was a lot of correspondence going back and forth. Everything was completed except the dome, and the contractor was raising questions and they ultimately changed how they were going to construct the dome. So it was really...
Thanks talking to the builder of the Vatican Dome?
Yeah, I think might have been the first design build.
I was just going to say that.
Alternative delivery.
Okay. Representative Madam Chair, whoever would like to answer, you had mentioned that the capital or sections of the capital would have to be set down when you're doing this work. Can you give me some idea? First of all, would that have to be done for the repair of the dome itself and then going on to the air handling units?
Madam Chair, members, for the dome repair work, we're not in, first of all, we're trying to schedule that so that happens during off session. So we'd hope to do that during this summer, assuming session ends on time.
Do you have you lined up the contractors?
We are actually, that's our next step, and we're looking at a CM at risk delivery method. So we obviously want the qualifications on our selection of contractors critical on anybody that's going to work in this building. We want them competing on qualifications and not just on price. So we're looking at a CM at risk delivery method, and that'll be our next step is to get that. We also have considerable design work to do as well. So. Related to other impacts on operations, right now the biggest question mark will be related to the internal rain leader and funny stack. It's going to be dependent on what we find, and are we able to, do we have to open up walls and go into spaces? And obviously, if we need to do that, there's going to be some disruption, but our first look will be to try to avoid having any disruptions to the occupied space.
Madam Chair, if I might just supplement that, Representative, what we were also talking about, however, was if we were to do the complete renovation, which would be a total upgrade of all the air handling systems, we would have, that's invasive, and so we would be getting into the walls in all areas of the Capitol. And so the plan, which had been originally presented, provided for us doing that at one wing at a time and vacating that wing, which necessitates finding swing space then for the occupants of that wing. There was a solution provided in that plan which was not accepted, but we do still have to deal with where do we put the people as we dislocate them for any of this renovation.
Yes, I do. But I don't know. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, and to all of you for presenting this. This is certainly a very important issue. We have a treasure on our hands. When we hosted the National Association of Secretaries of State here, people came from around the country, and the knowledge of our Capitol, once they saw it, we just routinely did tours, and it is really something, a treasure. There's no question that you have regular maintenance, but this is exceptional maintenance. Do you know, do we have, that there's a kind of, what do you call, I think there should be a fund established. This is obviously not the year to do it, but at some time in the future, we just ought not to be letting these things deteriorate like this. It's costing us, and there should be some sort of methodology by which you have routine maintenance, and then you have this sort of stuff going on. Has that been discussed before? I suppose it has, and you must not have been able to agree to what that encompassed, but, you know, to just argue over it and then not do anything while it's just disintegrating doesn't seem fair either.
We're waiting for solutions. So.
Well, my solution was to create a special fund that would be able to carry over from year to year. And the reason why is that whenever you have a fund that has to be consumed within 1 year or biennium or something, you have some of those issues that come up with expenditures or working together or doing all that. We know these things are going to be needed, and it wouldn't hurt to do that. And then you do, I think that would be tremendously valuable. Doesn't have to start this year. This year we could start it and create, making use some of your, what you said, Representative Kalin, making use of some other folks that might be willing to, and start putting it together and setting the plans or putting some of those things together so that when the time comes and we can turn this around, we aren't asking, well, what should we do now? But I think they're going to have some authority or some power as well as funds separated that accumulate on a regular basis, and it's kind of like any sort of a savings fund. It may accumulate for a while, but these are big expenditures, and you're either going to spend like $20 million or set aside $2 million a year or something so that you do that. Now, I'm seeing all kinds of smiles and chuckles. I suspect you must have been working on this maybe before, and I'm just not aware of all that.
No. Well.
Pardon?
It's, you know, every time we've done, and of course I've been through a whole bunch of these restorations of the Capitol, people are always very nervous about it. There is never any public outcry at all. No one ever goes and points to those restored Senate rooms and says how terrible that they spent that much.
I just noticed that somehow, why did the Senate chambers cost twice as much as the House chambers? I don't remember noticing and complaining about it at the time. I guess one of the things that we observe, one of the things that, of course, has been suggested is setting up a fund. It might, again, this never is the best time. This is not the best time to do that, but also make it accessible for donations for individual, corporate, foundation donations, and so forth. But we were looking at this, going back to your picture on the inside of the cover. Yeah, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for not stealing my idea. I just noticed that in the original construction, it looks like they sold billboard space on the outside of the construction fence. And, Commissioner, you might consider a proposal that we would require the effort to sell billboard space on the outside of any state-funded construction project anywhere as a way to generate revenue.
So, does anyone know what those signs say? You can look at them smaller and see if they look like billboards. They don't look like official.
Chicago Great Western.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, I'll send you a larger copy of that. it is very interesting.
Okay, well, I think, you know, it's probably maybe a little less crass than the naming of buildings that you're thinking of also. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Representative Dan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, I can bring this over to you and show you, but in your budget book under the Capital Area Architecture is actually a very good profile of kind of the history and some of, you know, what's going on and what has gone on. One thing I would say about the Carry Forward Fund, it always seems like those are the first funds that are raided when we get into situations like this. So, I mean, that's the one thing that I've noticed in my 2 years, 3 months of being here.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Kiffmeyer, I think you're on to something here. I think the 2% provider tax for architecture services, and I think that we could have, in addition to the LaSard Outdoor Heritage Council, we could have the Gilbert Asset Preservation Council, the GAP Council, to cover the gap in asset historic preservation.
Okay, we also need to keep things moving because we do want to have time to get over here and look at some of this stuff.
Why don't we move on to light rail and the impact of light rail?
Okay. Madam Chair, if we might then hold it, could you please, not yet, we don't need it now, but could you present some more detailed cost information? You have your high priority, you must have some working documents that give some idea of what you're thinking these things might cost, if they're guesstimates or if they've actually been bid. I'm assuming that the majority of the $1.4 million is pretty much spoken for, but I mean, we've got $14.8 million in appropriation, and I'd like to know where that has gone and or is going. That's what you can tell at this point.
Madam Chair, Representative Holder, we can provide you a breakdown of what we have to date, and particularly related to our information is pretty good on the show, and the X factor, of course, is what we're going to discover once we get into the investigation.
Right. Thank
we'll
you.
Provide you what we have.
Madam Chair, I think just in order of magnitude, it looks like about half of the amount would be consumed by the dome.
Okay.
To give you a flavor.
You know, I think Representative Holder's request is really good, and I think all the members would like to see it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Madam Chair, the next slide is we just want to get bring good attention to the committee. Obviously, the Central Corridor Light Rail Transit is coming down University Avenue through the Capitol area. It then turns down and goes on Robert Street, then over on 12th by the Armory facility, then cuts over by Cedar Avenue. And we've been working with both the admin and the CAP board have been working with the project team for about a year and a half on design and real estate related issues. The CAP board has statutory authority for design approval of the system. Admin is obviously looking at the real estate impacts and operational impacts to the campus here in the seat of state government. We recently learned that there's certain impacts that are not going to be addressed as part of the project budget. And I'll go through those just briefly. There's really three categories of issues that we're dealing with. We have real estate and operational impacts, and I'll go briefly describe that. We also have design elements and the architectural treatment along the route in the Capitol area, and then we have some potential environmental impacts related to noise and vibration and electromagnetic fields. Related to the real estate, and
if I might, just, you know, I know the people that are, some of the people who are talking about noise and vibration may have some, like, NPR and also, like, the university-sensitive equipment that might be in the medical school. What in the Capitol would be sensitive to noise and vibration?
Madam Chair, members, the lab, the Egg Health Lab building was one of the buildings that we were particularly interested in. We were also interested in the Capitol building. We've had some stone displacements in the Capitol building, and we were, from a vibration standpoint, that's one where, so far, the initial studies that have been provided by the project are favorable. It doesn't look like there's going to be impact, but from our standpoint, that's something that we're going to need to monitor both during construction and post-construction to make sure the studies actually reflect the actual experience once the track is in place.
I should know this, but it's hard to... Where is the Ag Health building?
Ag Health, Madam Chair, is at the corner of Robert Street. Oh, excuse me, item 17 on our graphic.
Oh, okay, thanks. Chair, if I might, you stated that you're realizing or determining, I didn't catch your exact terminology, what elements will not be covered by the project. So just so I'm clear, what you're saying is that the cost of the central corridor line will not bear these costs and that the state is going to have to address them. Is that what you're going to tell us when you identify these issues?
Madam Chair, members, what the project has identified, and this is not unique to the capillary, but they have a baseline, what they're referring to as their baseline budget, and they, we haven't yet seen everything that's in the baseline, and we're waiting for those drawings to see what the baseline looks like, along with cost estimates. But what they're saying is that anything that's above the baseline, stakeholders, and however you define that, stakeholders would have to provide the additional funding above the baseline. So really what we're intending here today is just, as soon as we can, we're obviously going to present to what the baseline, what's included in the baseline, and then those that are involved in funding decisions are going to have to make the decisions that they want.
And Madam Chair, if I might, is the state and our public interest being treated any different than, say, a business along the line in what the project will or will not cover?
Madam Chair, I don't know the specific answer to that, but I'd answer it this way. The capital area, there's obviously in statute there's requirements related to architectural treatment and design treatment. So if I would say, you know, in a sense, we're saying they have to meet the statutory guidelines that have been put in place for any type of building or site plans in the capital area. I don't think, so from that standpoint, we would be different than a different part of the corridor. And I, you know, certainly I can, I guess we don't know how the other areas, they're all going to, everybody's going to receive a baseline, a description of what's in their baseline, and we haven't had a chance to compare what's in our baseline versus what's in others.
And Madam Chair, if I might, I'm trying to understand this because I know that there's been a certain degree of tension, although friendly tension, as this project's been discussed over the years, and certainly some pretty big challenges about grade changes and tunnels and how they all work together and the state's ability to preserve options for further expansion to the north, etc. What I'm trying to figure out, and nobody's been able to be real clear with me, is to what degree is the state protecting the taxpayers' interest to make sure that the state as a whole doesn't end up subsidizing the Central Corridor project? In other words, you know, you're saying that because there's architectural guidelines and statute, you're asserting that those should be part of baseline, just like anything else, like safety or maintaining access and some of the other things that could be expected, say, in a general business setting. Are you getting resistance to that? Is it still under negotiation? How, kind of where do you see the power, how this is working out, and any even beginning estimates about what it's going to cost the state to accommodate Central Corridor on the campus?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, I answered in a couple different ways. One is, I'm usually on the other side of this discussion where we're actually, I'll use the Ag Health, the Freeman building as an example, where we're presenting a project to the CAP Corps for design approval, and obviously it's our responsibility to look at the budgets as well as the design. So we're often, we have to meet the standards for our building within the capital area. So, we certainly recognize, obviously, funding constraints and needing to balance design versus programmatic needs and other needs. Related to how our communications working with the project team, they've been very straightforward. We don't have the information on what is in the baseline. So that really, from our standpoint, that's our ask to them. Is as soon as you can, get that to us so we can give it to funding decision makers to decide, do they want something different than what's being provided. I would say, other than that, it's been, it isn't really, I wouldn't call it a negotiation. They're basically saying, here's what's in our budget. You have to look to other sources if you want something other than what's in our budget.
And then, Chair, if I may, and I understand that from the transit perspective, they have cost-effective indexes to meet, and they're trying to get their federal funding and suppress the cost of the project as much as possible. But there's no question there's some very expensive components to accommodating this on the campus, just in general terms, let alone architectural terms of making stations look nice, et cetera. Where are you with, how much time are you going to have in a timeline? You get the baseline when? Is this something that is going to have to be settled during this legislative session and money appropriated, or can it go on to the next legislative session? How do you see that working out?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, a couple things. First of all, we have, I think, made some compromises to help with the budget. That one is related to station design. Early on, we indicated that the Wright Street station, the station that we think is going to be really the gateway to the capital area, that one is the one station that we felt needed an enhanced design. The station that's across from the Freeman Building on Robert Street and the station that's Cedar Street, it's essentially going to be their standard station design. So we're not, as we were close to the Capitol Building and Lee Ferrickson Lawn and the State Office Building, we think that's really the gateway for visitors and into the Capitol area. So that is the one that both the Cap Board and I think Paul and Paul thought should be treated a little bit differently architecturally. With respect to the timing, they are nearing the date where they need to do another submittal, and they want to. They're essentially saying the money doesn't have to be in place this year, but a commitment to provide the money has to be in place sometime this year so that they can start including it in their design. If they don't have a funding commitment, then they won't include any stakeholder improvements as part of their design. And as we'll get into this, there's many of these improvements that if you don't do it as part of the construction, it's not going to happen.
We're going to have another session on this, maybe after we have some of that baseline information, because we do have to start moving now. People are going to see anything of the.
And I'm sorry about that. I spent eight years on the CAP board and on the transportation and on the oversight, whatever it was.
We've got plenty of time. It's just a problem of trying to do.
It seems like it's always more questions.
Madam Chair, we just wanted to begin to expose the issue that we may have some financial needs related to light rail, and we don't yet have full enough definition. I'd like to just close out the discussion however, with the last slide, which is, you know, like, what's next? We've got a situation here that is really depressing in the condition of our state capitol, and we put a plan forward that was paid for, spent almost $2.5 million for the plan, and it really did not get universal acceptance.
Well, I think one of the problems, and I'm sure you're aware of it, that was that there was House members felt very left out of that plan. As soon as it was presented, you know, the Senate totally bought into it, and the House members, not all House members, but enough of them that mattered.
So and absolutely, Madam Chair, I don't discount that in the least. I think we've all abandoned that plan. We need to say, let's move forward. And I think what we really, really want is a planning process where people are at the table and where they are engaged. And we would like to continue dialogue around what that would look like, how we might move forward with getting all the stakeholders to the table, willing to make decisions about space, about expansion, about budgets. You know, what is the scope of the project? And until we get everyone to the table in a really meaningful planning process, I don't think we can move this fall forward at all. So we've got some ideas about what that might look like, and we'd be happy to come back and talk to you and other committees about that. Because this is, for me, a legacy item. I would like, before the second Pawlenty term and I leave office, to have at least moved forward just an inch or two in getting this restoration underway.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
We're prepared to lead you on a tour of about 4 locations to take about a half hour. And with that, I think I'll turn it over. Your tour leader is Mr. Fielding and Dave Albion from our plant management staff.
Okay. We'll adjourn this part of the meeting and meet at the door.
Yeah.